On this episode of Movies Ruin My Life, it's our first ever debate, and what could be a more fitting topic than the original Star Wars trilogy? All right. Ready? You gonna go no headphones? You gonna be an asshole?
Yeah.
If he's going no headphones, I'm gonna go no headphones.
Can hear you.
See, this is what I know, but if you start peeking, I'm just gonna turn your fucking mic all the way down.
Sure. Just, all right. I should be fine right here.
Alright. If I notice you peeking, I'm gonna flip.
I won't be.
Why can't you wear the headphones? Why do you have to be such a douche?
The headphones.
You wear headphones half your life.
No, I don't.
My left ear is killing me today.
Okay. Are we good?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you look like a chooch with those headphones on.
Well, someone has to monitor the fucking recording because no one else wants to. All right, this is James. This
Hello.
Is Nick.
Howdy.
This is Devin.
Hey.
I'm Brandon. And this is our first debate format. We have no fucking idea what's going to happen. So hopefully it's not a bad episode. Either way, it should be funny. Just quickly to go through kind of what we're going to do. I've given you guys one cheat sheet with dates on it. Apparently, James and Nick probably don't need it. Probably Devin doesn't either, in all seriousness.
I do.
Since the first episode of this show, we've basically referenced Star Wars at least once in every single episode. So it's overdue that we have a conversation about it. And what better way to do it than to talk about the original trilogy and decide which of the three films are the best. If there is such a thing. How do you guys want to kick this off? Do you want... we were talking about a standard debate structure, so you kind of want 2 minutes to kind of intro your film and tell who you're fighting for and blah, 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 and before we open up the floor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably makes sense.
Sure, me.
You want to go counterclockwise? Devin, you want to kick this off?
Well, then that would be reverse chronological order. Does that make
Oh, true.
As much sense?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, so James, yeah, I'm throwing you the wolves. James is the only one that didn't have an opportunity to prepare for this and also showed up an hour late.
Sorry, Brandon.
So,
still love you, buddy.
I love you too. We've thrown in a hot guys reference a time or two on the show, so that's all
I like
James.
It.
That's all James. Also,
I like it.
Yeah. And in any case, James, you're fighting for A New Hope, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about A New Hope.
Well, as everybody knows, it's the first one. You know, it's a good one. It introduces the whole thing. It's you know, the root of it all. And
it definitely opens up the universe.
Yeah, it opens it up. It's like, you know, it's a good movie.
And technically, it's like the fourth one, right?
Well,
so we've already, you know, when they released the original trilogy, what, back in like 68 or something?
68, yes. Yeah. Same summer as 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so it opens it up.
I don't know.
What do you like about it? I don't know. What do you just...
Give me a little something here. You're not giving me much. Okay, because this one, there's a lot of talk about it being saved on the cutting room floor. You know, that it was a very different movie in George Lucas's mind. And this is the only one that he is kind of the sole screenwriter on of the series.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this one was pretty much his baby. Like,
yeah, this one is his baby. You know, for a movie of this scale, really a shoestring budget. And like... In this instance, like, he had no idea that this was going to be the kind of success that it was. He literally, for the fucking opening, he got on a plane with Steven Spielberg and went on vacation, and then came back and was like, "Oh, I guess I'm a millionaire," you know.
Well, it didn't happen overnight.
No, well, you know, but he held on to the toy rights, which we all know.
Oh yeah,
and these kinds of things. So, and obviously that film is one of the ones that has a lot of those transcendental moments, the moments you hear in culture a lot. You hear the, why am I fighting your fucking argument for you here?
I think you guys got a double team that movie.
Yeah, I think we're gonna
pile of shit compared to mine.
All right, I'll jump in and I'll help you with A New Hope, or just Star Wars. Like, let's be honest, it was just called Star Wars initially. Like,
Yeah, didn't they change the title back in like 97?
Yeah, I think they changed it for what, a VHS release?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. In any case, it's a great film. It opened up the you know, the saga. 92% on Metacritic. We talk about Metacritic all the time, just how, you know, a lot of the times the voting ends up being this kind of nullifier because of the fact that you know, you have the critics voting so heavily on one side or the other, they, you know, that you end up with most movies sitting in that 55 to 65 range. And for a movie to be on Metacritic and be at 92%, it just shows how amazing it is. It's got the most Oscars, both nominations and wins out of any of the films. And it did so in the shortest runtime of all three films. It's the least bloated in that sense. It follows a traditional hero arc. There's a lot of great things about this film that people kind of overlook, you know. And it's a different look entirely at a dystopian future, because it's, instead of this kind of dark, gritty, rainy world that you see in movies like Blade Runner or things like that that come after, even a 2001 kind of thing, you know, this very stark and futuristic world, you have with A New Hope, you have, or with Star Wars, very much a bright and dismal in the sense of like the sand and like the snow is bullshit in the second one, obviously. And,
hey.
And I'm just saying that their environments play such a role in, you know, in the movie, and I think that that Star Wars definitely opened it up with that. You know,
one thing about Star Wars too, you can even say it's like the traditional score. Like,
yeah, John Williams' score is amazing.
John Williams, like, it really set the tone of the films. It's more, everybody was doing sci-fi and they're fiddling with sound, like, make it spacey.
Yeah.
George Lucas was like, I want to make an opera out of this.
Yeah.
So he contracted a very traditional score.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
and it's legendary.
And it has become legendary.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Nick, what's your deal? You're fighting for Empire, so let's hear it.
Yes. Unfortunately, you guys have the shit end of the stick on this one. Well, the only reason Empire is, in my opinion, the best one is because everything goes to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like right off the bat, you got the Empire chasing the Rebels across the galaxy. Let's take it back to the first one. Rebels win. Everybody's on a high. They do their little ceremony. Oh, here's a medal. And then we find them, like, hiding. And for the whole film, it's like they get the shit end of the stick one way or another. Being chased across the galaxy. You're introduced to new characters. And by the end of it, it's like you're left. Wait a minute. The good guys didn't win this one. The bad guys won this one. You're left out of the theater. Like, what the fuck just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It pretty much changed the tone of everything. It's like, okay, we're not really, it's not a heroes movie anymore. It's a bigger story altogether.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's why. It's like, for the first time, especially as a kid, it's like, the good guys didn't win. The bad guys won.
Mm-hmm. This is the highest rated on IMDb at 8.8, slightly higher than A New Hope. 95% score on Rotten Tomatoes. Again, also Metacritic, very high score for Metacritic at 79. I have some holes to pick in what you just said, because apparently I'm fighting for alongside James here. But let's, Devin, what's your deal?
I've always thought this, and I've always been confused by the general consensus from most people seems to be that Empire Strikes Back is the best. And I always liked Return of the Jedi because it just, the most stuff happens. I hate not really empty space, but just especially in a series like this, just character development time. When it's like, I mean, you're three movies in, you should really, like, you know, even two movies in, like, you should pretty much know, you know, what these characters are all about already.
Minimal development time. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I almost feel like Empire Strikes Back had to be so heavy on that because Star Wars was just so overly light on it. Like, they, you know, almost don't explain most of the characters. And a lot of their character arc completely changes from Star Wars to Empire Strikes Back. So it's almost like they're spending the entire movie re-explaining people that they've already introduced you to. Whereas Return of the Jedi is one of those, you know, we've created the universe, we've established the, you know, everybody's role in this. Let's just have fun with it. Let's just blow a bunch of shit up and you know, cut like even more people's arms off. Like, one wasn't enough. Let's just cut everybody's arms off. And Jabba's a little barge there. It opens strong. It doesn't have like a. It has a little bit of a lull in the center of the movie, like I think they all do. But it's I feel less extreme because there's still a lot going on. Even during that lull, and Into the Trap is like the best cinematic sequence I've like ever seen. It's so, you know, there's just so many levels of the story happening alongside one another at the same time.
Yeah, so many moving parts to the story.
It's tense, beautiful. And it's long. It's like, you know, the original Death Star attack is probably, you know, what, like maybe 15, 20 minutes. Empire Strikes Back, I guess you would probably say the Hoth scene is like their big action scene. And it's again, like probably like, you know, 15 minutes. It's probably a little bit shorter than the first Death Star, whereas Into the Trap is like a whole third of this movie. It's like, it just doesn't stop. It's just... so much tension for so long that I don't know. It was that sequence alone wins it for me. But I think had a lot of other stuff going for it. Yeah. I don't know. I save it for the actual debate talk, I guess.
Okay. But. Anything anyone want to add before we open up the floor? No. Okay.
Let's just get right to
people
it.
Can't fucking see you on the podcast. They have
stop looking in the air. Stop looking at
okay, so I got
let's go with Empire.
You talk about the untraditional storyline and the flow of the movie, it's terribly interrupted. And admittedly I've watched this film more so than
majority of the other ones.
Yeah, you know, because the thing is, if I watch one, I always watch, or sorry, if I watch four, I always watch five. And if I watch, I don't necessarily always go through to Jedi, mainly because I just have shit to do, not because I don't like the movie. But one thing that I always notice is that both A New Hope, or whatever the fuck you want to call it, and Jedi... both pacing wise are far superior. There's no lull. You know, there's no point in either of those films where I can get up and take a piss and come back and nothing's happened. You know, I'm not just missing out on Luke doing a handstand on you know, with Yoda sitting on his foot or something like that. So the
hey, it's not sitting. Standing.
Standing on his foot. Yes, of course. And I don't want to take anything away from Frank Oz. I think the other thing that's interesting about your film and why – not your film. You didn't make it. But
how do you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a conversation about Back to the Future and Terminator. So you may have very well traveled back in time and wrote these films.
Did you see the DeLorean parked out front?
Yeah. So in any case – one thing that you—it's so interesting about your film, and so much so with Empire, you have to put it in the context of the other films, because there is so much character development that happens with already like set up characters.
It's,
you know,
more so not the character development, but the faction development.
Yeah, but you're dealing with an ensemble cast, and that's kind of a big problem for me, because in four and in six, there's a clear driving force to the film, which is Luke. You know, for better or for worse, in a lot of ways, he is the hero of the arc and so forth.
Well, the whole trilogy, it's all him. It's
yeah,
his coming of
in a,
age
in
story.
a lot of ways, yes. Whereas that second one, you do get a lot of pacing issues if you're not already super invested, which obviously I was in the film. because of the fact that you're jumping around from character to character, and you get more time with Han because you realize, like, the guy's screen gold. You know, you get more time with Leia because, you know.
Well, there's, like, so many elements to Empire that make it what it is. It's not only, like, it's Luke coming to grips with being a Jedi and living up to the legacy.
Yeah.
It's the love story between Han and Leia.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, you get the full effect of the Empire. Like, in A New Hope, you just see a bunch of stormtroopers fumbling around, walking into doors, and there's actually, if you pay close attention, there's one where, like, this door goes right up, and the guy's head just goes right into it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you see these stormtroopers, you see these TIE fighters, they're fumbling around. You don't get the full effect of the Empire, like, how powerful these guys really are. And come the first Battle of Hoth, they're just destroying the shit out of these guys. Like, you see rebels running for dear life, and Vader just maliciously going at them.
Yeah.
Like, his chase to get to trap Skywalker.
The other thing that your film does have, which my film does not, or our film does not, seeing as James is on board, is it doesn't have the Imperial March.
Mm-hmm. The Imperial March was pretty much one of the best pieces of music you can hear. Yeah, it's the most iconic.
In all of cinema. There's not a person of any age.
Well, your film does have that binary sunset where Luke looks out into the two suns setting.
Absolutely, yeah. You don't have to counter my support of your film with the support of ours. But you know, in any case.
But in any case,
I appreciate it.
No problem. But you do get this sense of, okay, this is what you don't see in the first. Like, you hear about the Empire, you hear about how bad they are, you hear about how malicious they can be. But you don't really see it.
Yeah.
It's not as prominent. This one, you see it in its full effect. Vader being on the ground in Hoth.
Yeah.
Then the chase through the asteroid field.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by Vader hiring a whole bunch of bounty hunters.
Yes.
And having them in a line. And it's like, okay, go find Han Solo. Bring him to me.
I just wonder, say, for example, like, let's talk about the asteroid scene. The asteroid scene is great.
Oh, cinematically, it's fantastic.
It's phenomenal. But when I compare that in terms of like a center action piece, a smaller action piece in the two films, and you go back to A New Hope and you say, okay, the center kind of action piece, you know, that quick moment of the Millennium Falcon getting away from the Empire versus the Millennium Falcon getting away from a fucking worm on an asteroid.
Well, it's not just the worm on the asteroid. He's actually... He's going all out. Like, in
maybe it's just a Western fan in me that I just love a good shootout.
But looking at A New Hope, it's like, okay, I got a couple maneuvers.
Yeah,
and I'm quoting Family Guy here, but he's just listening straight to the left.
Yeah,
he's not like, that's your maneuver. No, you get to see what the Falcon can do in Empire.
I got a couple maneuvers, cruise control.
Well, he's just dipping and weaving through asteroids. And he's just pretty much screwing the Empire over. It's like, okay, get into the asteroid field. Yeah. If those pilots don't even want to go in there, it's like, is this guy crazy? Get into the asteroid field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hamas, if I may, James, if I may, because you've said like three words the whole thing. Okay, because you're kind of on the fence here, maybe we should turn this around and because you were ill-prepared to come in today, I know that.
Sorry, Brandon.
You can play a bit of a role of an intermediary here.
So I'm the arbitrator?
Yeah, you're the arbitrator.
All right.
I'm curious about, because you have a big family, like Devin, you have a brother and a sister, and you're the oldest, whereas Devin is the youngest. So Devin always talks about, and in our Zero episode, he talked about having kind of this built-in filter where, you know, he had two people to lean on and say, you know, is this movie good? Not shit. Okay, I'm putting it to the end of my watch list kind of thing. Whereas you, very much in your family, in a lot of ways, setting the trend. So I'm curious, versus him, what your experience to the Star Wars universe was like. You know, because you're a huge fan. You're sitting here fucking saying nothing, which is driving me insane.
Well,
I'm going to go bald.
I like the original movies.
Yes.
And that's pretty much where it begins and ends with me. You know, with the holiday special, I kind of like to torture myself with that occasionally. Because it's funny. There's a few good parts in it, but
I like when the stormtrooper just falls off the... off like the banister or whatever that literally that like the kid Wookiee was just fucking walking on, but he barely touches it and just falls to his death, and you just killed someone in the kid's Christmas special.
Yeah,
it's amazing. That's the best moment in the whole thing for me.
And the Boba Fett cartoon. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool, too.
And B. Arthur's musical number.
Yeah, in the cantina. Yeah.
I think...
You didn't answer my question, but we'll get back to it.
Yeah. It's all good.
I think, the first movie almost sits outside of it for me. I mean, I almost have trouble debating against it.
It's
so... I mean, it was such a big moment in film in general. Like, and there's so many things that it does that that hadn't been done up to that point. And it really does probably the best job of any movie. I mean, maybe even since of just creating a universe that really kind of draws you into it. You know, creating like one of the things you said about. When you were talking earlier about like other kind of sci-fi of the era, I think so many of them fail to create like a compelling world, just something that seems alive, almost like what you were saying with, the kind of dark kind of sterile futures. They do almost seem like just the technology's it, whereas Star Wars, kind of built this world where it's about people, there's just shitty water farmers living on a shitty planet.
Yeah.
In
life
the middle
still
of
goes
shitty,
on
sandy space. And it's like, yeah, we got all this technology, but people are still really, driving this. Just getting by wherever they can, but I mean, what I was gonna say is
just living out in the desert and yelling at sand monsters.
So because of that, I mean, I really do have a problem
picking
apart the first movie, especially again because it was like it is like a bit more of a risk at that point, and you kind of have to tell a complete story. Because you don't know if you're going to be able to make a second one or a third one. You don't know if the studio is going to sign that check again, right? So you kind of just it has a clear beginning and a clear end. Empire Strikes Back, I find a lot of people defend it with two points, two things that you have brought up that I don't think are really valid defenses of it. A lot of people say it's interesting because everything goes to shit.
Bad guys win. No... I fucking hate that argument.
As much as
I don't necessarily disagree.
It's a second act.
Yeah.
We knew at that point that a third one was coming.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that it followed a first one where everything went well. A second act in this story arc has to be dark. It has to create that tension for the third one to deliver on.
Yeah, it has to be a cliffhanger.
I think a good second act
also
does end
movie.
That way. It does.
Yeah, cliffhanger's great.
But it has to.
Sorry, I had to throw it in there.
It has to follow that arc. So I think that if the defense of that of that movie as being something. So, so different than so many other movies because of the fact that things don't go well for the Empire, I don't think is valid because that's what happens in the second act. The second act is you know.
I also say they did introduce more characters to the story as well. Like, you get your first glimpse of the Emperor.
Yeah.
Which was big because you, like, hear about this big, bad Emperor, and then it's like... there he is.
I heard another recent defense.
Just cut us off. Just cut us off.
So you'd almost prefer to think of the original trilogy as just one movie as opposed to three separate movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
That's a long movie.
I still
but you can't release a six-hour movie. That's just insane. Yeah.
I still think the ending
tell like Charlton Heston that.
Yeah.
He's got a couple.
Yeah. I still
they
think
give you
the
three
ending...
pee bottles at the film at the theater. It's like, okay, here you go. Don't get up.
As you're walking in, and here's your catheter.
Yeah, exactly.
Your nurse will be by your seat in about 5 minutes.
Just all of the chairs just have like a hole in the bottom.
Oh, man.
It all just goes into a trough.
It's not a theater I would want to visit.
I feel sorry for the guys to clean that theater.
Oh, man.
I'm sure it would be a rather intricate, cleaning process.
To it. Yeah. They'd have it streamlined. So they'd have to.
One of the other defenses.
We could build this.
We could.
One of the other defenses.
And we'd lose
Empire.
Our shirts.
One of the other defenses of Empire Strikes Back that I've heard, that I hadn't really heard a whole lot until more recently, was that it's not about Luke, and it's about, you know,
It's the ensemble.
It's either about the ensemble cast or it's about the rebellion as a whole. I heard this forget who it was. I think it might have been like
I think it was Nick specifically.
No,
it was
no,
Nick
no,
on
no,
the internet.
No. Okay. I think it was some other big, like a Kevin Smith or something like that. To be honest, I can't even remember exactly.
But it is
where
true
it,
because but, like you do have where in the film is like you cut away from Luke and then you switch to Leia and Han and then you start seeing the love okay. story grow.
But I'm more focusing on the idea
that it's about
the rebellion and the struggle on a whole more than that. And I think that really does only cover, and it's a defense that I've heard of this movie that I think
you do
is
get the full scale, like the rebellion. It's like, they are really just rebel pirates, like just in space making do with what they have.
But like the,
Hoth, they have really big ships though. I don't know where the hell they got those from.
Hoth is a slaughter. Like the specific, defense that I heard was that, on Hoth, you see everybody kind of working for the greater good. You see, the guys like manning these stupid glass computers until like the very end. You know, the whole place is just fucking falling apart, and they're still trying their hardest. But like, where do you see that more than Return of the fucking Jedi? It's like,
which was the original theatrical title.
The very yeah, that's true. That's true. No.
Revenge of the fucking Jedi.
But
which
they
I want to tell you know the deal with the Star Trek thing, right?
Which one?
Okay, so we were just talking about this. So Return of the Jedi, originally called Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And then they have Wrath of Khan, but it was originally called Revenge of Khan. So they caught wind of it being Revenge of the Jedi and changed the title to Wrath of Khan, which is fucking better. It's great that they did that.
I've never heard this story.
Yeah. And then George Lucas just, it's not a Jedi trait. Let's change it. Which he's right.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that film's title changes actually affected, a peripheral sci-fi franchise.
Besides, Khan doesn't take revenge. He's all about wrath. He's like that classically trained actor, but we're getting off topic.
Yeah. Star Trek's a whole another discussion. That's another can of worms.
But the explanation I heard behind that was that, yeah, you're right. It was originally supposed to be called Revenge. I remember a friend of mine telling me that they changed it because the Jedi don't seek revenge.
Well, that's what George
that's
does.
True. Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying peripherally.
Yeah,
there's a story about them, getting wind that Return of the Jedi was originally called Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
Subsequently, that they didn't want to have a similar film in space with revenge in the title, so they changed it, and then George Lucas, turned around, and it was like a bait and switch. Mm-hmm. He turned around.
If I could quickly finish a point that is actually about this movie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Because I'm waiting for this one.
I was just going to say that you don't see how much they care in Empire Strikes Back as compared to Return of the Jedi, where they've committed everything. Everything is on the line, and they need this to work. And you see so much sacrifice from people. Like, hey, these ships could just warp the fuck off. They could just be like, well, shields up. Yeah. Like, fuck it. And the Death Star fucking fires a laser and just blows the hell out of one of them. And the rest of them are still like, I guess we got to stay. Like, I guess, this is.
Yeah.
We need this to work. So much so that they don't care that, like, every 5 minutes there's going to be a big goddamn green laser blowing them up.
But the one thing about Return of the Jedi is they take so many aspects from the first two and they mold it into one movie. Like, the first movie, you got the space battle at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Second movie, it's pretty much ground warfare.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's the great one-on-one confrontation.
And the great one-on-one confrontation. Yeah. Exactly. So you put all three in the same film, and then you got Return. Because you got space battle on the Death Star. You got pretty much ground combat on Endor, which is pretty much Rebels and the Empire going at it on Hoth. And then you got a whole giant whack load of fighting with Vader.
But do you have Leia in a bikini?
No.
But why is that? Why is that?
But I do got a scruffy.
I think I'm changing my vote.
I still got a scruffy looking nerf herder. Okay.
But I don't see how that's like I don't know. I don't really necessarily see the validity in that argument. Just because isn't that awesome? Don't we want to see all of these things together? I mean, A New Hope, I think the problem is that it's too focused on just these, like, you almost lose the humanity of it during a fight like the Death Star battle, because obviously there's not, like, you couldn't do as much at the time, like, with what they had in terms of budget, in terms of technology, in terms of all that kind of stuff, that it does end up feeling a little bit... you know, if you're not seeing an exterior of like, you know, an X-wing and a TIE fighter dogfighting, you're seeing like a single camera on a guy's face, and that's like it, like just cut between these two. And then in the second movie, like
it's, Porkins. It's, why did they have to call him that?
I was just gonna go with Porkins, like seriously.
And in the second movie, you get to see a lightsaber fight for real, finally, because obviously Obi-Wan versus Darth Vader was not like a very convincing fight in the first one.
That was pretty convincing. Like, against for an old guy, he's pretty spry. He's got a saber up at least.
But then in the third one, you get to see all of this shit together. You get to see to see Lando flying, you know, losing a satellite dish, flying through a tiny little tunnel with TIE fighters.
Oh, he got in deep shit for that, man. He probably did. Like, you gotta admit, he probably got in really big shit for that. Like, Han gets back, it's like, what the fuck, man? I said not one scratch.
You know, it's interesting too, something you brought up. The series is very successful in its escalation. We talked about with Terminator, you know, where it kind of fell off the tracks because it lost the idea of the not necessarily just making bigger set pieces, but the emotional investment that you need you know, as you go into the sequels. So you need everything to be bigger and badder and so forth, which you see in modern day sequels. But what the original trilogy did so well in a lot of ways is that as much as they got bigger and crazier and the world expanded legitimately, the emotional investment required out of the audience also expanded.
It kind of stayed grounded in a sense.
Which is so interesting, because initially in the first film, you very much are connected to kind of the plight of this shitty kid, in all seriousness, you know, like, oh, I want to go to the academy, like, fuck you.
I want to go to Tashi Station.
Yeah, like,
I was going to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters. You could play with your friends later, Luke. Do your chores.
Yeah, exactly. And so they do it very successfully. And again, in the second film, they start to build that ensemble cast, and they put some of the other characters at risk and so forth. And then in the third one, you get this payoff where the entire Rebel Alliance is at risk. All of the main characters minus Luke are at risk in a different environment, and then you have Luke kind of coming to terms with his fate in another environment. You have this beautiful trifecta of scenes going on. It is really fucking emotional, you know, and that's something that they each movie, you know, calls for an investment. If you don't do that off the jump, then you're not in.
Well, it's kind of like about Empire. It's like it kind of splits you up. Like, you invest in different characters throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
So you got the Han and the Leia. You got Luke on his own going to Dagobah to meet Yoda. And then you got the Empire chasing everybody across the galaxy. Mm. But it all ends at the same place. It all ends in Bespin.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you meet Lando and you find out that he's a real sack of shit, but he's actually a nice guy. But he'll steal your wife underneath you, because let's face it, it's Billy Dee Williams. He's going to steal your wife. But I just, you learn more about the characters. Like, you see more development as they grow. You find out more about Luke's background on Dagobah. You find out more about, even the droids even get their part. Mm-hmm. Like, poor 3PO gets blown up.
Yeah.
Sees a whole bunch of stormtroopers. We can assume they're stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
And then gets blown up. And then you see Han being tortured. It's like, as a kid, that's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it definitely is. I know that Devin is going to end up here, so I'm curious on this. In Empire, I know that he's super at terms with this scene, and I'm kind of on the fence about it, where Luke goes into the cave and confronts.
Oh, what a bag of shit.
Come on,
confronts,
man.
You know,
his don't go for the obvious argument, please.
Well, I'm curious on your perspective on it, you know, the execution, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, is that an effective foreshadowing or, you know,
you're
what I
talking
mean?
Talking about the Vader mask?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you even call it, foreshadowing?
I saw that as a kid, and I thought he won. I was like, oh, cool, he killed Vader.
Yeah,
like, wicked. Who is that? Like, it's him?
It's weird. It's a little confusing, I think, during the first viewing.
Yeah.
You know.
As a kid, you can't fully grasp what's going on. It's just like, he killed Vader. Awesome. Movie's over. Let's go. Wait,
he killed himself? Well, you know, and
but this argument is more of a recent argument. Like years later, people are like, okay, it's just the writer's like hinting at something.
Yeah, I mean, don't know. I just feel like it could have been more,
but I mean,
cleanly executed, perhaps.
But that's not the whole point of the whole cave story.
Mm.
Like he goes into the cave, he's warned: leave your weapons, go in on your own.
Yeah.
Luke not listening to anybody. He's being stubborn at this movie. Like he was whiny in the first. He's stubborn in this one. He finally gets his shit together in the third, which I'll give to you on that.
Yeah, but he's super. He's a badass in the third. He's almost got like a Clint Eastwood vibe about him or something. You know, it's really.
Oh, he kind of screws. Oh, don't even. He gets caught by a bunch of like mini Wookiees. We'll say Ewoks.
Yeah,
like come on! It's just like
okay, but you know he's dressed all in black. He's got a plan. He does the thing with 3PO. He redeems himself. You know he's methodical. He's waiting out his moment. I don't think that's as cheesy as you know as someone's face exploding and his face is underneath it.
Yeah, I mean the whole point of that whole cave was. Don't go in without your weapons.
Yeah, him being
because
stubborn,
if you go in and kill Vader, you essentially become Vader.
Mm.
Not the whole Vader's your father thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty much you kill.
You give in to the dark side.
You'll give in. Like if you attack Vader now, you don't complete your training, you will fall further into the dark side than you actually thought you would.
I accept that explanation of it. Like I don't think that's so much the problem as it is just like a kind of a what would you call it? Like a cliche trope of not just film, but storytelling in general, where it's like, don't do this. I did it. Oh, it was me all along. I beat the bad guy, but it was man.
True.
Like, it's just this old Twilight Zone kind
of. Well, the whole point of it's like. He fails his training in the end, which is incredible, too. It's like he does fail his training.
Yeah, he does.
And I mean, I wish we don't really have time to get into it, but I really think that'll be validated if Luke is evil in the next trilogy. If it isn't, like, why did he do so? Why is he so shit at training to be a Jedi? Like,
yeah,
he's a little bad.
And then he's so badass, like, in the third one where he's telling...
Yeah, but I mean, even in his training, you see this guy doing, like, somersaults and backflips and...
Yeah.
Lifting rocks. We're like, okay, lifting
rocks.
Is
he training for the Olympics or
is
he becoming a Jedi? Yeah.
He got the Bruce Jenner training out of that one.
Yeah.
But I mean.
So is it. So he's going to come back in the next sequel as a woman?
Oh, he's going to be Leia.
Yeah. That's the twist. He is Leia.
That's why they haven't shown any photos of him yet.
Yeah, they have shown photos
he's
of him.
He's got longer hair. He's got longer hair. He's probably run over a couple people.
Oh, no. Bruce.
Oh, poor Bruce.
But the one thing that we take away is
he's
like,
still
Yoda was a hard ass. Put it this way. Yoda was a hard ass. Like an old Jedi master, he was a hard ass.
And say what you will about that whole situation. Bruce Jenner, he's an Olympian, you know. And he, regardless of his life choices, and if you agree with them, you just everyone deserves the opportunity to live their life the way
exactly
fit, not under scrutiny.
If I can walk around dressed like a Jedi and holding a lightsaber and walking into stores every day, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, well, you haven't even mentioned you're growing your beard for the premiere.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be dressing up as Obi.
Yeah.
Though I'm not sure if I'll get in with a lightsaber because there's this whole thing going around. No masks, no lightsabers.
Mm.
It's kind of shitty.
Well, and that's the other thing too. You're dressing up as Obi-Wan and you know Alec Guinness, the only actor to be nominated for a Best Supporting Actor or any Oscar in this film that was, you know, specifically for an actor happened for his performance in the first one. Now, I know that he hates that film. He, you know, he doesn't really want it to be, you know, as prevalent in his or in his filmography as it is, I think. But, you know, still a wonderful performance and one that you can really latch on to, which is sorely missed. And then, of course, you know, you get the voiceovers, you get him again in the ghost form in the third one and so forth, or the sixth one. Mm-hmm.
And there's two things that for me make this an open and shut case that I would feel remiss if I didn't bring up.
Yeah.
So first, there are two kind of like not even looking at it in terms of specific plot points or anything like that. But there's two ways of looking at this movie or this series of movies that I think at least make it a little bit of a harder judgment to make than society in general has deemed these movies. Like Return of the Jedi, I'd just like to point out Metacritic 52%, Rotten Tomatoes 79%, is trailing by almost 20%.
Well, but in both those cases, those are situations where, Rotten Tomatoes has kind of a situation where very often they do either very strongly back a film or they very strongly don't back a film. Yeah. So even having a 79 to me is a lot of, in my mind, it's a lot of critics on Rotten Tomatoes saying, well, I didn't personally enjoy it, but I recognize that it's an important and significant film and it's a well-made film. So that number doesn't really bother me as much as the Metacritic, where it gets into that nullifier range where you can't even count that score because it's in with all of the other films that half the critics love and half the critics hate. And when you go through it on Metacritic, it is very much like that.
And I'm talking about it specifically relative to the other films. You can't rate Jedi 52 if you're rating, or you can't rate it on Rotten Tomatoes, 79% versus a 95.
Well, the IMDb, IMDb rating though. It is, it's only off rating by like at least four, but, like 0.4.
But here's the two analyses of these movies that I think, like I said, make it pretty in my mind open and shut for Jedi, in everybody else's mind at least a bit more difficult. Look at each of these movies as if the entire trilogy didn't exist.
Okay.
Right. Look, each of these is an individual movie that you're going to watch with no knowledge of the first, you know, if you're watching a new.
So they're all individually set as their own story.
I don't think I could enjoy The Empire Strikes Back. I don't think it works without everything that came before
without everything
that comes after it. I don't think, I think it ending on a dark note would be interesting, but it doesn't have enough to keep me. There's like the rising
the structure's
action.
Untraditional as well. Yeah.
There's the rising action from you know Hoth and everything getting really tense there, and then it's just this like
downward spiral.
Yeah, it kind of bumps around. I mean, obviously you've got like the spooky, like, oh, who shot C-3PO in the thing and stuff like that. So that's one thing, okay? That's one thing.
Yeah.
But now,
what's your deal with A New Hope?
Look at it in terms of the second movie without the third one, without them having been able to make the third one. You can't have Empire Strikes you can't have Empire Strikes Back without Return of the Jedi. You need Return of the Jedi to make this movie valid. And if you watched The Empire Strikes Back thinking that there's not a third one coming, it's not that great.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not compelling.
Yeah.
It's a strong argument.
Something I've been reading up a lot on lately, and I've actually done recently watching these films back, is I've done it in what they're calling machete order, which is the which is basically you watch essentially A New Hope, then Empire, and then you go back and you watch Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and so you get both Luke's story and then Anakin's story, and then Jedi acts as the crescendo, the coming to terms for both pieces. And it's a very interesting rewatch order. It's not something that you'd want to watch the first time around, but it does definitely grant a level of up support to your argument here. The only thing I kind of want to say is I didn't even come in here to argue for A New Hope in all seriousness. And if you ask me that question, you know, which one stands the most alone, the answer is A New Hope. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah, because it actually has an open and shut ending.
Yeah, it follows the hero's journey and these kinds of things. It's it.
The whole throne room scene at the end, done. Kibosh. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
So, but again, you know, as much as I'm not...
Let's look at it from a viewer perspective. Like,
yeah,
just watching it as like somebody in the theater going into a movie, which movie you're going to have more fun watching? It, yeah. It's probably going to be Empire, because just watching these guys whiz around an asteroid field, doing barrel rolls, watching TIE fighters fly into themselves, and pretty much all the fighting in between.
Yeah.
And it's more of an enjoyable story.
But that raises an interesting question, too. And sorry, I keep getting distracted because I keep looking at this fucking copy of Rio Lobo behind you that I didn't know I had. I love Rio Lobo. So when you guys go, I'm watching Rio Lobo tonight. Watching John Wayne and his tiny feet. But in any case, back to the argument at hand, now that I pointed that out so you guys know why the hell I keep looking over there. For me, I just feel like... with the series, it's one of these situations where all the statistics that we can bring up, all of the you know, the runtime, whether it's bloated, whether it's concise, whether it's
box office scores, any
you know,
that.
A proper structure, whether it's not, the argument to me either has to be which is the most loved or which is the best film. And it's an interesting element to bring in, and maybe we're going to take a break in a second, but it'd be an interesting element to bring in the second part of this and see which is more important to you. The fact that you love Jedi and that you love Empire and you're so attached to them and it's built out the universe and made it so important to you in your life. Is that more important, or the fact that this film is the best standalone, or this film has the best action pieces or whatever, and it's the best execution, you know? And I think as a society, you have to come to terms with that argument as well, you know, because do we want to rewatch the movies that are just, you know, the best when we reflect on them, like the best films? Not necessarily, you know, there's people that, you know, have watched Home Alone 3 a ton of times and have only seen Home Alone 1 and 2
once. It's a cinematic masterpiece.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
it's like watching Jingle All the Way. That's an Academy Award for Sinbad right there.
Yeah, they got
cinematic triumph.
They got big time awards.
Yeah. So in any case, I think, is this a good time to take a break, or do we?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a little break. We'll come back. And I'd like to get into that. What's more important? The love for the films and their longevity, or just literally, this is clinically the best film.
The film itself.
Yeah. So I guess I'm arguing for A New Hope.
I mean, it's pretty pointless either way. I mean, defending either of those other two pieces of shit compared to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, but, you know, James is such a big fan of this series, I really expected him to be all over you guys and just tear you apart.
Yeah, but I mean, I think all's well that ends well. Return of the Jedi is the best movie, no problem.
All right. Okay, however you guys are taking part in this episode, please don't forget to leave us comments, share, reach out to us so we can keep this conversation going. All right, so we're back, and this whole time, East has been sitting on the fucking stairs listening to us. He broke into our house, so he's joining us on the panel. Hey, East.
I also made a coffee.
Made a coffee.
I helped myself first.
Yeah. Of course. Okay, so, yeah, let's get back into it. Where do we want to go here? Where do we want to go? We have to fucking share a microphone. This is going to be ridiculous. Keep me quiet anyway.
We've had kind of like an open floor for a while here. I mean, do you guys want to, like...
Want to just really go in depth with each film?
Well, actually, you know what? There's one more open floor thing. We discussed it outside. We probably should get into.
Yeah.
It probably should be brought up. And I, as much to my dismay, but There were Ewoks in the third movie. Okay, let's air out the dirty laundry here.
The Teddy Bear Cannibal Picnic.
Yeah.
And there was also two sequels of Teddy Bears.
TV
series.
I understand that it's a
and a comic book.
I understand that it's a pretty strong argument against Jedi. It's for the kids, you know, and that's never really a valid reason to do anything.
And selling toys.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't really call it the strongest argument. If you really want to go against Jedi, you could pretty much say the whole dance party at the end.
Yeah.
They Bollywood the shit out of that film.
Yeah. Well, you know how the movie was originally supposed to end with Luke burning Vader and then just leaving.
Which would have been fantastic.
Like, he was just depressed as hell about it. And yeah, I mean, they made mistakes for sure. But my defense of the Ewoks, which granted, I will agree, is the absolute... It's so dumb. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it could be anything. It could have been anything. And the fact that it was Ewoks, who really cares?
It was supposed to be Wookiees originally, right?
Yeah. It was supposed to be Wookiees originally, yeah, I think.
But tall people do cost a lot of money. Peter Mayhew makes a lot of bank just being Chewy.
Hey man, it's hard being Shaq.
But
yeah, they had to pay. All they had to pay him is in gummy bears and lollipops. Man, half of those guys were kids.
Oh. They paid him so much money they didn't even give him a medal. They said your medal was in your paycheck.
But they could have. Yeah, I mean, my defense of it is just that they could have done anything there. It wouldn't really have changed it too much. I mean, if you wanted to make it more serious, like it could have been like an exiled Jedi, or it could have been like a group of forest living people, or like even something natural, like just they find like some like a volcano or some stupid shit, or they cut down a tree and it falls on the shield generator, whatever. It doesn't have to be. It could have just been anything. And the fact that they chose to do something for the kids.
Well, there's one point that I will agree to. It's like guerrilla warfare. It became guerrilla warfare. The whole heart of a whole rebellion is guerrilla warfare.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. It's like, use what you have.
Yeah.
And take down the powers that be. And that's what they did. Like,
exactly.
They beat the shit out of them with, rocks and twigs?
Yeah.
And two giant logs that crushed an AT-ST? Incredible.
And who hasn't shed a tear or two at that one scene where the little Ewok goes up to his mother or his friend or whatever and like shakes it and is like, wake up. Nope.
Yeah. Realization of death, yeah.
That's harsh. But like another thing as well is that if the movie, like we were talking, the ending was supposed to be really, really, really dark. And you can't really end a trilogy on like such a dark note like that, especially when your first movie is called A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if they were going to have it where it's like all these Wookiees are killing everybody, that's going to be a gory battle because you know they're just going to be ripping arms and legs off of people, right? Like,
but even still, Luke wasn't even the New Hope. Like, Luke technically didn't kill the Emperor. Vader did.
Yeah.
So really,
yeah.
The whole prequel trilogies, the whole Chosen One thing, he lives up to the reputation. He really is the Chosen One. He pretty much kiboshed the whole dark side, and in the end, he dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it lives and dies with him.
Yeah.
Well, now, what we thought, now we got the new movie coming
out. But I mean, like, but to end that movie with a son burning his father, you know, and then just being like, well, I'm going to go up to space. Yeah, you got to add, like... You know, how are we going to desensitize this a little bit to give it a bit of a happier ending?
We put Billy Dee Williams in it, dancing
Billy Dee
around.
Williams dancing around with some teddy bears. Han's not going to die.
He's the only one dancing, too. That's the best part. They're all taking like this cast photo, and he's just standing there doing like the disco clap. He's got the shoes on. He's got the Jerry curl. He's got that wicked stash.
Brother's got some dance beats. Why are you expecting the clap?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to fuck me one of them bears.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man.
That's true, man. They could have done that in Star Wars. Look at Kirk. He was sleeping with all kinds of shit.
Yeah. I don't think he wanted to fuck the bear. I think he was just eyeing Leia at the time. It's like, if you ain't hitting that Han, I sure as shit am.
It would be great if in the new one, if Lando's kind of like, you know, Clint Eastwood in, oh, man, what was that movie? He's got the monkey. Clint Eastwood with the monkey. We've seen this movie.
I've never seen this movie.
Clint Eastwood and the monkey.
You got, come on. And you're thinking about it.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
Any Every Which Way But Loose. There you go. Yeah, Lando could have been like a guy with Every Which Way But Loose. Instead of a monkey, he's got an Ewok. He just goes around and hangs out with this Ewok all day solving mysteries. And
yeah, that's kind of like what Han and Chewie are, though. It's like, we're just going to fly around, blow shit up, maybe steal something.
Yeah, but his teddy bear rips arms off of people, and you don't want to get him mad when you
beat
him.
We haven't seen him rip arms off anybody.
Do you think Han even knows? Like, imagine Chewie is just saying things that he's not understanding. Like Boba Fett? Boba Fett? No, I'm not saying Boba Fett. Like, that's not what I've been saying for like 20 years. I've never been saying what you think. Yeah, right. I'm
he's
saying,
like, he's like Boomhauer from.
Yeah. I don't think any, like, Chewie's probably like the most profound character. It's like he's probably like this like philosopher in speaking. It's like, well, if we do this, we can beat the Empire in 5-6 different ways. Good.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Your fur is so soft.
Chewie gets petted 100 times. Like, they're rubbing his ears, like treating him like a pet. He's like, stupid humans.
And he's been philosophizing with, like, Yoda, you know? Because at the end of 3, when Yoda's there, and he's like, bye, Chewbacca. I'll see you later, bud. Yeah. Even though they never see each other again. But
We don't talk about that. That's just wrong.
But I mean, we should probably go back to just like a closing defense of each film. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've probably have we articulated. Does anybody have anything that they want to say open floor before we?
Well, let's talk about the film score itself. Like in each film, like it progressively goes up, but for me, Empire had like the most heart in its score, especially like towards the end. Like, come on, you did like as a grown man, even watching Empire now, I still shed a tear at like seeing them look out the window, watch the Falcon fly off, and it's like the John Williams takes it away.
The only film in the series to win for best music is A New Hope. So me and James win, even though he's barely said anything.
I think again the like I actually I was enough of a geek growing up that I had the when the new trilogy came out, I had like the whole the CD collection of like every and I still think Into the Trap as a sequence had everything going for it, including music. It was the I think it was the I mean, I guess they all kind of go along with the action.
Even the asteroid, like musically, the asteroid scene too. Like the way he does it, it's just like almost like a car chase, but it's just space chasing.
Yeah,
like I imagine just listening to that at night or driving on the highway. And having that playing in the background, you're going to be dipping and weaving out of traffic. It's like, okay, there's an asteroid. There's an asteroid. That's a cop. Shit.
But I mean, like, the score, my favorite is in A New Hope when Luke, when he first leaves his house and he realizes that there's more out there and he's looking into, like, the sunset, you know, and, like, that music's playing. Like, when I was a kid, I'd go up to my cottage and... Like, we'd go up on a Friday, and when, like, the sun was setting, I would always stand at the end of my dock, and in my head, I'd always have that music playing. You know what I mean?
Got the one, man.
Yeah. I feel you there.
You can tell why that scene alone is, like, Oscar-worthy of...
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, John Williams in general.
Yeah. And was nominated for Best Picture. Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah,
that makes sense. And they brought him back to do all the new ones. Which is going to be his last movies, John Williams, apparently. Yeah. After the new score that he's doing for this new trilogy, and that's it.
Yeah.
He might even be dead when the new one comes out and he scored it.
Let's not say that.
Yeah. Come on, man.
He's 87 years old.
I know, but who's going to be next? Danny Elfman?
Yeah, this is the guy.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm quoting Family Guy here. It's like, oh, great. John Williams is dead. Now we got Danny Elfman.
It's true. The guy, in a lot of ways, shaped our childhood.
Uh-huh. And not just musically. The Star Wars films in general.
Jurassic Park.
Hook.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Hook was a huge one.
Mm. Hook? Yeah, that's a...
Still can't draw tears listening to that score.
Yeah, man. To die would be an awfully big adventure.
To live would be a greater one. And yes, I did muff that line up a bit.
That's okay. Yeah, should we...
Yeah, let's do closing
Should we
arguments.
Digress? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Okay, a reverse order, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense. We started in forward order. We'll do reverse chronology. I mean, I think I've hit on everything that I wanted to say. I think if character development is your argument, the completion of Vader's character arc and Luke's really becoming more than just a whiny sissy motherfucker.
Absolutely.
Leia really becoming finishing off as a kind of a really strong character. Like, she chokes Jabba to death.
Yeah, she
just with a chain.
And she's just in a bikini too. Like, I will give you credit. That was cool as hell.
So character development, I think all of your major characters really are at their best during the scene. It's got the best action sequence in Into the Trap with so much going on at once. You've got the space battle, you've got the battle on the ground, and you've got Luke fighting the Emperor and Vader up on the Death Star. You've got strong in and strong out. With the Jabba's Palace scene, where you really get to see everybody actually have a role in things, whereas before it was more like one person kind of takes them home. This one is more like, you know, if they didn't have any one part of that escape, it wouldn't have worked. I mean, granted, Luke kind of he brings it together, but I mean, like, even, you know, Han Solo takes out Boba Fett. The droids actually contribute instead of getting blown up and just opening doors. Everybody has a part in that, which I think might have been a little bit weaker in the earlier films, where again one person tends to take it home in the previous films. And I think seeing Vader as a more rich character than just a looming, you know, kind of a dark force. And for those people who say Vader just makes this complete 180 and is just a completely different character, he thought he could do it. He thought he could do it on his own. He thought he could change his son's mind. He thought he could just fight him and be like, look how powerful the dark side is. You want to be with me, right? And for that to have failed, all he wanted through the three films was to just be with his son.
Yeah.
And so for that original, he doesn't do a complete 180, just the original strategy that he thought would work didn't, and he realizes that in the third film. So I think all of these things together, and the score, and the visual effects, which obviously they had more of an ability to do at this point, it's just the best movie, period, in my mind. There's not even an argument for me, so.
Nick?
Well, in my mind, I'm still with the Empire on this one. The character development in Empire, especially the introduction to some new characters who have now with us for how many generations, like Yoda, we got Lando, even the Emperor himself, like getting that first glimpse of him. Yeah. Even if it was just for like a quick second, you get a quick glimpse of them. But also the vulnerability of the characters in Empire was something really you want to see. Like, they lose a lot of hope in Empire. It's like, we're being tortured, we're being pushed across. Like, these guys are just like, what the hell do we do next? The whole fight between Luke and Vader on Bespin was another huge thing. It's like, you see Luke's progression, but he's still handicapped in a way. He still has that stubbornness, that hard-headedness. He goes from whiny to stubborn. It's almost like that. It's like I said, it's a coming-of-age story. Yeah. And it's like, he thinks he can take the world on. He thinks he can beat the ultimate evil, and he gets his ass handed to him, in a sense. The whole scope of the film, for me, is the story, how it's, you don't really see the good guys win, and that's like the major argument. But it's also the introduction of new characters, like seeing Lando and having him, watch him have, he's got this plan, he's going to keep it, and the Empire completely screws him. And like Vader just, he gives him like the worst screw job on the planet. It's like, you don't get the city, and okay, you get to keep the city, and you get to keep Leia. Okay, we're taking Leia, you get to keep the city. You don't get anything. We just completely shafted you of everything. Bye-bye. But for me, it's just the whole scope and range of it. From start to finish, you're on the edge of your seat. You start with a battle. You end with a loss. And at the end of it, you have Luke hanging there, calling out to his master, like, help me. Like, he's completely vulnerable. He's completely defeated, calling out in pain.
He lost his hand, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. He did lose his hand. That poor bastard. Can never jerk off the same way again. But, I mean, he's calling out in pain to his master and not hearing any replies because he was warned, do not go and fight. You will lose. And then finally reaches out and gets Leia and then gets brought in. And then at the end of it, they're all sitting there at this uncertain – this is the most uncertain point in their time. It's just like, where do we go from here? We lost one of our own. We have the fleet. We're on the run. We don't have a base anymore. What do we do now? And that's like – to me, that's like one of the best things I could ever see. It's like that uncertain future. Like you don't know if there's going to be another one. You don't know if there's anything. Like, they could just end it there. But it's that uncertainty of – what's next, which is really something I enjoyed in the story.
James, you want to hop in on this?
You start us off there, Brandon.
Okay. So we're going to go at this tandem?
I'll just jump in.
Okay. So this is a hard one for me because I didn't want to take a position on this. To be completely honest, I wanted to stay out of this fight because I love these films so much. I know you just rewatched them all. Recently, right?
Yes.
Within the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which makes time number 490.
Just the original trilogy, not the prequels.
Yeah. In terms of... I want to look at it from the significance that Star Wars has or had on the landscape of film. It changed everything. You know, from the moment it came out to today, it a lot of those things have become transcendental in our lives. You know, there's so much classic storytelling, and some of those things, yes, are borrowed. But the reality of things is, you know, it brought a lot of greatness into our world as it exists now. You know, it's the jump off point for a franchise that's now lasted the better part of a century. You know, it's music that's shaped four generations of people. It's film that's shaped four generations of people. And, you know, in terms of just pure numbers, in North America, this is the sixth, adjusted for inflation, the sixth highest grossing film ever at the box office. Worldwide, number 46. Only thing even close is number 40 for Jedi in North America and number 107 for Empire worldwide. There's so many things to love about the first film. I feel like the character arc of Luke is, you know, for a child, and obviously Luke is very much new, holding onto the toy rights, what he was getting into. I think it's a story that a child can latch onto. Seeing the growth of someone that you can relate to on that level is shaping. Seeing someone like Obi-Wan, you know, there's so many classic moments. Like we talked about the barge and the buying the droids and the relationship between 3PO. That opening sequence is phenomenal. Blowing up Alderaan is fantastic. You know, and it's like
Leia loved that part.
Yeah, Leia loved it. and you know, it's taking off the gloves from the beginning of the film. It shows the both the fearless nature and kind of the cluelessness of the filmmakers going into it. Just this pure passion project, and you see it and you feel it when you're watching that film, much more so than I think. And not to take away from Jedi, because I love Jedi, but you see the love in the film and the want to make it something great, much more so in Star Wars than you see in Jedi or A New Hope versus Jedi, whatever you want to call it. But I just kind of want to round out with the thought of the Death Star scenes at the end. Now, I know there's errors in them. I know, like you already touched on, there's guys in stormtrooper outfits just banging around, have no clue where the hell they're going. You know, it goes back to the whole mentality of, you know, putting stuff together with duct tape and making it look amazing. I think that you can't take that away when you look at that film. It's still breathtaking. And, you know, that the whole end sequence, just the emotional roller coaster that creates, you see a friendship, a reluctant friendship, but a friendship nonetheless formed between Luke and Han. You get the beginning of this love triangle, which frankly is something that we've all been a part of in our lives. You know, we've all, you know, wanted someone we can't have or vice versa, right? We've always there's so many elements on that front. The paternal figure of Obi-Wan, or the surrogate paternal figure, facing his end, and the emotional response that you get as an audience from that, and him coming to terms with that. You know, you see all of that. And you get that great moment at the end with the medals. You know, I know that in retrospect, maybe as adults and cynical adults, we feel very apprehensive about enjoying that scene. But frankly, it's gratifying in so many ways, because you look at it and you see these essentially three misfits in Luke, Chewie, and Han that have reluctantly taken on this quest and subsequently fulfilled something greater than themselves, and you know, and that in itself is a great lesson for humanity. You know, that one person, or in this case three people, can make a significant difference. You know, and coming in not even wanting to argue A New Hope, I'm leaving here today literally of the mindset now that it is the best from the discussion, just because of the fact that, you know, yes, there's not the ensemble cast, there's not the character development across the board the same way as there is in Empire. Yes, there's not the same size set pieces as there may be in the third one, and there's, you know, the action sequences are nowhere near as elaborate perhaps, but what there is this strong emotional connection between you and the film and the characters, and between you and the filmmakers, because you're all on this ride together. If you buy in from the first second, that suspended disbelief stays with you in a way that I've experienced very few times in my life. And that's, you know, it's beautiful. It really is.
Not to mention, New Hope also had the highest kill count out of all of them.
Yes.
With the planet being destroyed and the Death Star blowing up.
Mm.
Fuck you, you can't count.
Oh, you can count those.
Dude, a planet blew up. That's a whole fucking planet. And the Death Star. So imagine, like.
That counts as one.
Okay, and then the
Death. That counts as one.
And then the Death Star blew up. That's a huge ass base. Fine, don't call it a planet, but that's a huge ass base. And it was complete.
I don't think the Empire would be that pissed that the Death Star blew up. It's like, we'll just build another one. We got the money. But the guys who built that fucking thing are like, you kidding me? You know how long that fucking took us to build?
Yeah, and this is another thing though. Is like, when they even tried to rebuild it in Empire, the Empire himself had to be like, how am I going to dupe the rebels? I have to give them the plans myself to send in a mission, only so then can I possibly take them down. You know what I mean? Even then, it wasn't even fully built yet. That was a fully operational death machine, and they blew it up. There were sections in Return that weren't even completed yet when they blew that fucker up. That's a lot of. That's a huge death count, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to get right in that thing.
Pretty much one and three have higher death counts than two. And two is still considered like the darker movie.
Yeah. Yeah, we did see a teddy bear die, though, in Return of the Jedi.
Okay, so everyone's had a final thought. Hamas, what do you have for me, James?
I just like them all. They're all good.
That'll do it.
Well, you know what? Okay, so you haven't said a whole hell of a lot for this whole thing. But who do you think convinced you the most out of the three of us? Because you haven't really stated a specific
I'd say Brandon.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
You asshole.
But yeah, honestly, I like the first one the most. Yeah. It's good.
What do you like about the first one, you fucking tool?
Like I said before, it just establishes the whole franchise. And yeah, I don't know. Everything you said, basically. I don't know. It's just a good damn movie, okay? Leave me alone.
Oh, man.
Okay, any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Watch the holiday special. It's amazing.
Watch the Muppet special. It's even better. Luke Skywalker meets Mark Hamill in an all-out war. It's interesting. Mark Hamill wears a tux.
That's right. I forgot all about that.
Well, the new trilogy is starting soon, and I can only hope it's as good as it promises to be. But do not watch these movies without watching the 4, 5, and 6. Don't go see.
If you're gonna watch the originals, please dig out your old VHS player, go to Value Village because I guarantee they got a shit ton of them in stock, and get the original trilogy on VHS and watch.
Yeah.
It's grainy as fuck. The sound's kind of shitty, but you will not be disappointed.
And that version of Return of the Jedi is the only one you should watch because that Jabba's music sequence is
pretty... Oh, shit. I forgot about that one.
It's pretty good.
It's not canon.
That Han actually shoots first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hayden's not at the end of the original.
Yeah,
which is just wonderful.
That's just so weird. I don't understand why they would even think ever that would be a good idea, because Luke would not recognize his father in that form.
I know,
at
right?
At all. Like, it's...
Well, to play devil's advocate, Luke isn't really... He only really saw his dad's face once.
Yeah, but he's still
going to
recognize that better than, you know, like a 22-year-old.
Yeah, it's true. Like, what was he trying to say with that? Like, that was the Anakin that died. That's the one that everyone will remember and love. No, I hate Hayden. He's a bad actor, and he's a whiny little bitch.
You know, I don't know. I thought he was good in Shattered Glass.
Oh, fuck. Do you like him in Higher Ground, too? Like, what's up?
Fuck you. All right. Can I do this end read, and we can get out of here? All right. Remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation. We want to continue it on with you, so please go to our website. Yell at us, tell us what you think, send us a message on Twitter. I'm at not Brandon Fleet. Devin?
Matt, your homeboy, at YR_homeboy.
Seeing as East hopped on this, where are you?
I'm at Ant East. Just Google that.
No, you don't have a Twitter, Nick, but you have an Instagram, right?
I do have an Instagram. It's nromita1124 at Instagram.
Any underscores, dashes, dots, anything?
Nothing in between.
So Nromita, Romita,
1124.
Cool.
You'll see an Obi-Wan Kenobi picture on there. It's very tantalizing.
Excellent. And good sir? Sir James?
At James McBride, Twitter.
Fantastic. Now, hopefully, I really do want to get you back because you're one of the funniest people that I know. We've been friends for a decade. We play in a band together.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and... It's been a pleasure just having you here. It's
been a pleasure being here, buddy.
And looking at you.
I've missed you.
But in any case... Okay. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, or the podcatcher of your choice. If you're listening to us, please visit us on YouTube and check out all the stuff that we have going on there. For this episode, by the way, for Twitter, we're using, obviously, you can always hashtag MRML, Mermal, or we're using the hashtag Mermal Wars, MRML Wars.
Catchy, ain't it?
Yeah, with a Z or an S?
Fuck you.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Wars spelled correctly.
Okay.
In any case, so get in touch with us. We really want to know what you think because, you know... We barely scratched the surface. I don't think you can really do justice to the series. We need a day and a half to get into anything.
Day and a half? This is going to be like a week-long discussion.
Yeah. So feel free, please reach out to all of us. Get in touch with us. Tell us what you think of the new movie, too. We are going to come back here in December. Actually, I think we're going to do a kind of a live chat with like over Skype or something like that, or Google Hangouts or whatever we're going to do, and hopefully have a chat element so you guys can give a shit on our opinions as well.
I'll tell you how I cried in the theater after watching it. It's probably going to happen. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So, and all of us are going to be back. I'm going to get East in here too. And, you know, to do a little bit on Force Awakens and talk about what we thought of that film. Please, if we got anything wrong, tell us. If we're stupid, tell us. We want to talk to you. We want to, you know, we want to talk about these films because they've been a part of our lives for the past 29, 30 plus years, right? I'm sorry that I pointed at you when I said 30 plus. You're like.
It's okay. I've come to terms with it.
Okay. I think that pretty much wraps it up. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Every bullet she shoots hits and kills something.
Yeah,
he has 100% accuracy. You watch every bullet she fires. That's what's like insane about like women who are badass in film. Sarah Connor's badass, sure. You know what I mean? Ripley is badass, sure. But Leia's got 100% accuracy.
Yeah.
100%. Like, you can't fuck with that.